Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the campsite killer.
Yeah!
Yes, on Friday, October 9th, not quite the 13th, but you know what? It's Friday the 13th of November this year, so didn't quite work out for this month, but also didn't want to skip this movie because it only gets a 40th anniversary one time, and if we are still podcasting in 10 years from during its 50th anniversary, that would be a little surprising. So yeah, as much as we could hope that Rebel Radio goes on forever, realistically it probably won't be going on in 10 years. I mean, that's just, you know, keeping it real. So but how are you guys?
Peachy.
Very peachy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Peachy might be. Peachy's a good word to describe things. It's kind of like you get to, like, you make it through the heat of August, then nothing freaking exciting happens in September, and then October just sort of shows up. It's like that slow grind to get to the holidays, you know? And October feels like one of those months that just lasts forever. And some people love it. Like, they love Halloween, they love October. I'm kind of in the middle of that. You know, I know, Matt, you like Halloween a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But I do enjoy the baseball playoffs in October. Congrats out to our Astros in their fourth straight ALCS, embracing the hatred of the league for being so-called cheaters. But, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I sure triggered you about that.
Embrace the hate, earlier. I say. Fuck yeah, you did.
Big old text walls.
That's right.
Mom. Oh, I touched a nerve.
That's like, I was talking to my boss about it the other day, and I was just like, you know, I said first of all, they only uncovered that we cheated at home, and we were the best on the road team that whole entire year. I was like, in the examples that they gave for the games that we cheated, that they could tell that we cheated, we lost those games. So how effective was it?
I've been saying this forever. Not only
still
that,
have to hit the ball.
How come the league never released the actual report, what they actually found? That says a lot right there.
Yep.
You know?
So. Yeah, because they found out other teams are fucking cheating too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Red Sox, yeah. Yankees.
Yeah, the Yankees are such hypocrites. They were caught cheating the same way.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, there's only one thing left to do, to quote the coach from Major League. We just got to go out and win the whole damn thing. And it could happen. And if it doesn't, still highly successful run of seasons here for the Astros. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But that is what October's about. October baseball, I guess, and Halloween and horror movies. You know, I don't even know what movie we're doing next week. I better look that up before the end of the episode when we get to previews. But
yeah,
I believe
so. It is Halloween month, as Halloween horrors continues this week with a quite a famous franchise. We're going to talk some of our favorite horror franchises later on. But before we do that, let's get the show going as we always do with Download This, where we tell you what we watched, stream, video games we played, things we checked out on our own time this past week. And I know all three of us have been playing a game that we'll talk about in a minute. But besides that, anything else you guys have checked out, watched this week?
Watched the new episode of The Boys. I know, Mark, you've been keeping up with it, but man, it just keeps.
I'm a couple weeks crazy. Behind. I'm like, I think I'm on five, so I'm a couple weeks behind.
Are you on a giant wiener? You on that?
I have not seen any. I haven't seen any giant wieners yet.
Okay, you're gonna fall out whenever you get to that episode. Watched Halloween 4 and 5. watched Friday the 13th, number 6, Jason Lives, Poltergeist 2, Edward Scissorhands, Hocus Pocus, and Silent Hill.
How do you find all this time along with working?
You're watching one movie a day, right?
One movie a day. There was one day I did two movies in one day because I wasn't able to watch anything today. Halloween 4 and 5 were in one day, and I think I watched Scissorhands. No, I didn't watch Scissorhands Hocus Pocus in one day, but I did Halloween 4 and 5 in one day. That was my off day. So Sunday, got back from working the game, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch a horror movie and just relax in the room, and ended up watching two. But that's how I have to do it. I watch I try and watch two on my off days, and I'll watch one most of every night because me and the wife like to at least watch something. Another thing that we've been watching is a YouTube channel, and it's this girl, and she does a true crime little podcast, YouTube video cast thing, and she talks about these murders or unsolved mysteries where there are murders involved. And her name is Bailey Sarian, and her channel is very popular. She covered the Chris Watts killing. That was probably the most recent one. So I think Netflix has a show where they covered that one. But it's, man, she divulges all these different details, and she's really good. And I can see why true crime podcasts like that are very successful and very popular. It's just very interesting, very intriguing, and I just can't stop listening. So I've been listening to like, I think I listened to like 4 episodes this week. It's just crazy what's out there, you know, the kind of people that are out there, you know, in the ether.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There was this one guy that thought that a dog was possessed, and he was a demon dog and was telling him to kill people. So he would walk up to like random couples and shoot them. And he was basically taunting police because he would do it every other month. And when they caught them, he was like, "It was the dog. The dog told me to do it." But they actually found out he was pretty smart and that he was just trying to use that for mental, like to be able to qualify for not being able to stand trial so that he could go into a mental hospital and not prison. But they saw through that. He was called the Son of Sam. That's what he wanted to be called. Sam was the dog.
I think I heard something about that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't as ambitious as you, Matt. I only saw two things of note this week, besides waiting for my new sound system to come in.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyways, the first movie I watched was like, I don't know how old it is. I think it's like 22, 32 years old. I don't know. The Rat Race.
Oh, nice.
old classic racing comedy. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's not familiar, there's a couple of names in there I haven't seen in ages, like Breckenmeyer and Amy Smart, you know. Amy Smart. Yeah, Wayne Knight was in it too, but it's a Whoopi Goldberg and all that. But all these people are racing from Las Vegas to Silver City. Mm-hmm. And it's all these hijinks. Oh, and John Lovitz is in it too. And a bunch of hijinks where all these random strangers are trying to get at the winning prize of $1 million. And John Cleese is the host. But John, yeah, Rat Race.
I don't
remember, but every time I flip channels and I see this movie playing, I just have to watch it from the very end. It's a very, very simple comedy, but I like it a lot. It's pretty creative too. Time. Yeah. And then the second one was a documentary from HBO Sports. It's about Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. Basically, it's just about their coaching styles, how they became friends, and what they discuss whenever they get together, and follows both their careers. And I didn't know they were both Croatian, of Croatian descent, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I didn't know that. So I said, Bill Belichick made a remark that they probably are distant cousins somehow. but it's a very interesting documentary. Everyone knows about Bill Belichick, but I was more interested in Nick Saban. I wasn't really familiar with his football career. And almost every franchise he touches become a success or become a very competitive team. He spent only 2 years as a Miami Dolphins head coach, but he took him pretty far. But some college offered him more money, and he did it. So, and now he's a freaking god in Alabama.
Wasn't he in Houston?
I don't recall.
I could have sworn he was a defensive coordinator for the Oilers, right?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
Tie the Oiler, but I don't think it was that up in the ranks. I don't think it was a defensive coordinator.
But there was that time when Bill Belichick was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns.
Yep.
Vinny Testaverde.
Nick Saban was his defensive coordinator. Yep. So they were a really good team. That team competitive in like 4 years. So
they went to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Vinny Testaverde.
Yeah. And that's about it. That's my to download this. So, yeah. What about you, Mark?
I didn't watch as much. That's hard to find free time, but I did finish Cobra Kai season 2 finally. It's continues its cheesiness. Its predictability is there. I mean, I think we all know at some point that Johnny and Danny are going to team up together to take on Kreese and whoever else may end up showing up in season 3. There's a lot of rumors of Silver showing up. I had some issues with the finale. I just felt like there was a lot of story threads that were moving forward that in a matter of about 15 minutes, they undid all those stories in the finale. And I was just like, really? It's almost like they put us back to square one. And so that was a little frustrating, but the show's, it's not meant to be taken too seriously, I think. The original movies aren't that serious. It's Karate Kid.
I don't know. Matt, did you like the season finale? You never did answer in our text chat.
There were aspects of it that were cool. I think the school fight could have been a whole lot better. I think whenever I did the podcast with You Suck Podcast, they were just like, how does Hawk go from, I don't put up with anyone's crap, I'm a tough guy, to I'm going to kill you, and just being this, murderous kind of guy. Yeah, they rush a lot of people's storylines. They don't take a whole lot of time with some of these kids' storylines. I think Miguel and Daniel's daughter are probably the best developed, maybe even Johnny's son. Probably those three are the best developed. Everyone else is kind of rushed. I think we could see a redemption if Tori ends up being Silver's daughter, which I think that's the biggest speculation, is that that's why she's so good at martial arts off the bat, is that she's Silver's daughter. And then there's that teaser trailer where I think we're going to see Chosen, and I think, of course, Allie's going to come back because she got he got the phone call from Allie. I think it was Johnny or Daniel that got the phone call from Allie. Someone's phone was going off.
It was just a Facebook request. Yeah.
Facebook request. That's right.
Well, and then my thing is,
it's been a little while since I saw it.
I know the show. I completely get it's supposed to be kind of corny and cheesy, and I'm fine with that. But then there's like a lot of the unnecessary, like the guy who calls himself the older guy who joins
Stingray.
Yeah. He's like, he's pointless and he's just annoying. That kind of stuff. I'm like,
got my yellow belt.
You don't need him in the show. He does nothing to move the show forward, and stuff like that's kind of annoying sometimes. But there's some great stuff in it too, like the dinner scene with when Johnny was on his date and runs into Daniel and his wife, and stuff like that makes the show really watchable. Those small moments like that.
Yeah.
But it is fun. I know Netflix already announced season 3 in January. And they already renewed it for season 4, but I don't think this show should go on too long. Otherwise, it's gonna run its course and jump the shark eventually. you got to keep this kind of short and sweet. You know, four seasons would probably be enough.
It's like, are they going to bring Hillary Swank in season four, the next Karate Kid? Yeah. Go that route, maybe?
Yeah, who knows? That movie was terrible, though.
Yeah, it was.
So we'll see. But other than that,
I didn't even know there was a Karate Kid Part 3.
Yeah.
There's a Part 3 and a Part
4. He inadvertently joins Cobra Kai. Well,
the Part 4 is called The Next Karate Kid with the girl. It's not that good. Part 3 is not that great either. It has moments in it where Daniel, you know, he defends his title at the tournament and all that, which is kind of cool. But like the guy who plays Silver is a god awful actor, and he's hamming it up throughout the entire film in Part 3 to the point where it's hard to watch because he's not very good at all. And if they bring that actor back, I hope he's a little better than he was back then, because he's really, really bad. I mean, it's just terrible acting in Part 3. But Part 3 has enough in to be watchable, too. You know? So. But, yeah. You didn't know there was a Karate Kid 3? Really?
No. It totally flew under my radar. Mm-hmm. You know?
So. I really like Part 2. The thing about Part 2 is just, it's the character development movie. It's very slow. It takes a long time to get going.
Yeah.
And a lot of story.
Yeah, but it's really good. It's just a lot of story, and nothing really happens till the end of the movie, you know. But I love the fight at the festival and all that. It's really great, you know. So, and I do like Part 2. So, but other than that, I'm like on episode 5 of The Boys, so I'm trying to get caught up on that. And then we all three of us end up getting a copy of Star Wars Squadrons, and I haven't dove real deep into it. I don't know how far you guys have, but it's hard.
It is. That's the story mode is not easy.
I'm like, God dang, this game is not easy. But it's also it's also a lot of damn fun. When you're firing at TIE fighters that are blowing up right in your face, it's pretty damn cool. I mean, the game it looks fantastic. It feels like a Star Wars space simulator. It's just hard.
Yeah. Diverting, when to divert your power to your thrusters, and then when to back off and divert it to shields. And then you're like, okay, you know, I'm right up on this TIE fighter, divert it to weapons so I can take this TIE fighter out really fast. And then switching back to a defensive speed and raising your speed. It's tough.
It's funny though. Switch between I play the Star Wars Galaxy's Legends server, and the space combat, you have to do that. You have to divert power with your droids, things like that. But it's a keyboard system, so it's so different. And I think when I was playing Squadrons, I'm like, this isn't working like Galaxies does. It's revert power to my shields.
Yeah. I wonder if sometimes maybe the controller plays a part in that, you know?
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Like if you have a joystick or something, might be easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I have my joystick setup. It's very intuitive with the game, but you know, I have to customize the controls to make it feel right. But the one thing I couldn't key correctly was the special abilities for the starships, you know, like the bombs, how to bomb or use missiles or use their special abilities, you know. So that's a little frustrating, because the way they named those freaking controls, it's just frustrating.
Yeah.
But other than that, hopefully I'll try to be able to dive into it this weekend. If not, then
I think my only other beef with it so far, well, the only beef is like early on, the early missions, it's a lot of following someone, then you blow some shit up, then more following blows. I'm like, okay, are we just gonna follow people the whole game? Yeah, but it's a minor quip.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
But
it's like, now I have both of y'all on my friends list. We'll definitely try to do multiplayer or something sometime soon.
Yeah, we'll have to.
I tried to do a multiplayer match the other day, but it wouldn't connect. I don't know if it was my internet or the servers are just busy the other day.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Or I wasn't patient.
Yeah, I couldn't get a match in either.
Yeah.
The other week. So. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah,
that's our download this.
Yep, good stuff, man. Well, let's get into our featured film then. A super popular franchise over the years that just had a major re-release this week on Blu-ray of all the films in a big collector set. A movie that is now 40 years old and spawned, man, what are there, 13, 14 sequels? I don't fucking know. A whole lot of fucking sequels. Yeah. And that is
too many sequels.
That is, of course,
yeah, 14 if you count the fan film.
The super famous Friday the 13th. To summarize this film, I guess I'll summarize today. It's very pretty simple. It's a group of campers that are hanging out at a Crystal Lake, and a series of murders starts happening. And come to find out, at the end of the movie, it's a mother whose son Jason drowned in the lake there, and she blames the camp counselors and people, I suppose, and so she's killing them. It's that simple. And his birthday happens to be Friday the 13th. The movie takes place on Friday the 13th, and that's how the franchise is spawned through its name. And but yeah, I think a lot of people, I think the biggest, I want to get this out of the way before we get into the biggest misconception about this movie is a lot of people don't realize that Jason's not the killer in part one, but yet I think a lot of people think he is. And it's actually his mother. Jason doesn't show up till part two. It's one of those things I didn't know for many years until I really paid attention to what the movie was. And, but this movie, rewatching it, it's very much in the vein of like John Carpenter's Halloween. Not a whole lot really happens in this movie until the last 20 minutes, you know, very similar to Halloween. It's a lot of, you know, they see the killer through their eyes and you never really see him. There's a couple of deaths early on, but not much really goes on. A lot of really dumb jokes in the movie that just sort of come out of nowhere. And that's my biggest thing with this. Like, I'm rewatching this week. It's been a few years since I've seen it. And I'm like, how did this spawn so many sequels? Because it's just not that great. But yet at the same time, it's very watchable. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really spawned that tits and blood horror movie.
Yeah.
Genre, the camp tits and blood, you know, horror movie. And, you know, that which spawned, you know, Sleepaway Camps and other
all kinds of
kind
movies.
Of spoofs. And yeah, which really this is a spoof that or a you know, plagiarism of Halloween, really. John Carpenter had all that success, and the producers are like, all right, we need to go out and make our own version of Halloween. And they went with this, which, you know, I'll talk about all the good stuff. The lore, they do a really good job of building up the lore. It's Camp Blood. There's been multiple murders. Stay away from it. It's cursed. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this Jason and everything. And you've got a really good, you know, background, really. And then you don't have as much detail going in other than that.
Right.
But you have this whodunit going on because of the POV style of the killer. You don't know who it is. And you're like, man, is it one of the campers? You know, who is it? And then Betsy Palmer shows up and she's just crazy as heck. great performance by her. That, you know, hearing Jason's voice and then mocking, kill her, kill her.
Right.
She's, and then her teeth, just, she might be scarier than Jason. Maybe. Just the way she comes at you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the original jump scare that's in this one where Jason pops out from the lake. Those are probably the best thing. Oh, and Tom Savini's practical effects. Yeah. Tom Savini, yeah.
What's so weird? Yeah. Maybe in part two, they kind of show that whole lake scene again, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. At the beginning.
Because I kept swearing that's in part two, not in part one. But that's what it is. They kind of retcon and reshow it in part two. Okay. So I'm not going crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They retcon that dream sequence.
Yeah. I have a confession to make. I was not able to watch this movie all week. So I felt bad. So I spent time doing homework on this movie to make up for not being able to watch it. So I'm bringing to the table 10 facts, behind the scenes facts about this movie. So first fact, This movie was only made with a budget of $550,000.
Yes, sir.
And it grossed big money, $39,754,000 at the box office worldwide. Basically its first weekend, it made $5 million, which helped it break even about pretty much tenfold. Pretty good opener for a budget so small. And in general, during the mid-80s, every critic pretty much were not open to horror movies back then. So, you know,
yeah,
that kind of explains why The Thing was bashed pretty hard, which is a phenomenal movie now, even by our standards. And that goes, you know, with Friday the 13th. So, so one of the first facts that I'll go over is that this was inspired by both Halloween and Blockbuster slasher movie. And it was also inspired by Meatballs, the teen sex comedy movie set in the summer camp. And both of those inspirations were big hits in the youth market. Second fact I'll go over is that Betsy Palmer said that when she first read the script by Victor Miller, she said, "What a piece of shit," and threw the script across the room into the trash. Palmer said that she thought about it and she needs some money for a new car. And the movie would probably come and go very quickly and no one would ever see it. And then it would be quickly forgotten. That's what she assumed. So she decided to take the job. Little did she know, it became a phenomenon. It would be the main thing she would be remembered for. Crystal Lake Memories can be viewed, which is a documentary on YouTube. Oh. I have some more facts as we go along.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
There's a lot of 80s things in this movie. Very 80s. Hiking across the state to get to a job.
Right.
Who does that anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
Haven't they heard of the internet? No. The
internet.
Oh, no, they used newspapers and bulletins and all that stuff back then. the idea behind the scene where the counselors have to kill a snake, they had to find one in the cabins, was to differentiate the movie film somewhat from Halloween by having an early fake scare turn out to be a legitimate, as well as establish the characters as capable of taking action if need be. However, there was no PETA around that film set, meaning they actually took a machete to a real snake.
Wow.
Allegedly, the owner was standing on the set watching and sobbing when it happened.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Killed the snake.
Yep. So I don't think they'll have that disclaimer that no animals were harmed in the filming of this movie.
No, for sure at the not. End.
Yeah, except and for the snake.
How primitive is this camp? It's like, it's so dark. There is, there's lanterns everywhere, but like, even the movie, even in high definition, it's like, it's extremely dark film where everything is just so black. And then the characters I noticed always had like purples and yellows on to look a little brighter than everything else. And I'm like thinking, is there no electricity at this camp at all? It's like, everything is so dark. And,
they were trying to get it ready.
Yeah.
So in their defense, it's like it's not a complete camp yet. Even the archery targets that they bring out are just like tattered. Don't even look like you can see the the bullseyes anymore.
Yeah. And this movie definitely, like you said, it spawned the whole don't have sex in a horror movie because you're going to die thing. And which happens a couple of times in this movie. It's like, oh, they're having sex. They're going to die. Sure enough, they do.
You're dead.
This movie was nominated for a Razzie for the worst movie of that year.
I'm not surprised.
Really?
And,
because it's definitely,
No, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, if you compare it to, like, the first films in every horror franchise, really, it's not better than Halloween, I don't think. It's definitely not better than Nightmare on Elm Street. No. It's not better than Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Hellraiser. But for some reason, it did extremely well. I think because this genre was growing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know,
well, it was a huge movie for horror. 1980 was a huge year for horror movies. You had The Shining come out, Prom Night. So, yeah. Like you said, this genre was growing at the time. And I guess moviegoers were looking for this kind of stuff because this is definitely, I'm not even a big fan of Halloween, but I will say that Halloween's a better movie than this. And, but somehow it spawned this huge franchise that went on to make several sequels. I think part two's popularity led to the look of Jason, you know, the hockey mask killer. You know, people were like, oh, that's cool, you know? And somehow this movie found success, and it's really not a very good film. It's one of those movies, though, it's a watchable film, but it's not great. You know, it's poorly shot. It's not directed extremely well. You can tell a lot of things were done in one or two takes. All the gore is in the dark to make it look scarier and a little bloodier. And the kills aren't even all that fascinating. You know, they're just kind of knives through the throat. They're kind of plain. You know, there was no creativity.
They're graphic, though.
They're graphic, but there was no creativity to them.
Yeah.
Somehow it found an audience. And I think it goes to what you said. It was just that time for horror films. They were starting to take off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the axe to the face, the arrow to the neck, those two are probably the most
right.
Well, and of course, and you know, Pamela Voorhees getting her head cut off.
Oh yeah,
that was pretty nuts.
Well, one critic hilariously called Mrs. Voorhees and Jason stereo cockblockers.
Stereo cockblockers.
Stereo killer cockblockers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Let's see. For the scene where Bill plays the guitar, Harry Crosby is actually playing his own guitar. The song is his own, too. So.
Oh, interesting.
Ooh. Whoa. Yeah.
We got a rock star here.
Oh, and Harry Crosby is the son of Bing Crosby.
Oh, wow.
And he didn't want to be played any favors. He just wanted a job to get his career started.
Nice.
And, yeah. And but. I guess this is his peak movie, of course, or something. Because I haven't seen Harry Crosby since.
Of course, Kevin Bacon's in this. It's his second movie he made. But this this is the movie that actually more spawned his career. I wonder, I didn't research this. Like, the stigma of Friday the 13th, did it exist before this, or did this movie franchise kind of spawn that stigma?
Matt would know.
I would say this movie spawned that stigma.
I wonder. I guess we got.
I know.
Well, like Friday 13.
13 was always an unlucky number.
Well, you know, Friday 13 is supposed to be kind of like an extra Halloween day in the year. People think scary things happen, and there's people that celebrate Friday the 13th. And but I would imagine if the stigma was there before this movie, the movie obviously helped it become a bigger stigma. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, in France. They don't consider it an unlucky day. They consider it a lucky day for some reason.
Yeah.
Could be a reason that rooted in pagan beliefs. You know, Friday the 13th. Speaking of Kevin Bacon, his character lying in bed with his throat impaled by an arrow has the blood in his neck making little bubbles. Originally, it was just meant to seep out, but the arrangement of the tube didn't work. And Tom Savini ended up blowing into the tube to make it flow, causing an unintended bubbling effect. And that was ultimately used. Yeah. There was a mechanism. Yeah. Well, no, not really, because no one has air bubbles in their blood.
Oh, I just meant like your trachea. You know, if you're
trying
to breathe, then there might be some bubbles coming up from that. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess one more fact I have is that the final body count is 11, including the snake.
Including the snake.
Including the snake.
Yeah.
Respect.
So, There you go. That's my homework.
Well, that and nice. Another reason this movie did find success with test screenings. You know, test audiences, even though critics didn't like it, test audiences liked the film, which caused Warner Brothers, United Arts, and Paramount to all fight over distribution rights for the film. So I guess word of mouth through teenagers and people like that probably went to see this back then. It probably became a cultural phenomenon thing too. Like, hey, critics didn't like it, let's go see it. And but it spawned, I mean, what are there, 12 or 13 sequels plus a Freddy vs. Jason movie. There's been a remake of it a few years ago, which wasn't very good.
2009. Yeah.
So was it what, Friday 13th, the 13th?
No, they just called it Friday 13th.
Part 13.
It's not terrible, but it's just not that great either. It's just one of those remakes that it's like, eh, why? You know, but
you've got part 1 through 6.
What about Freddy versus Jason?
Dude, you've got Freddy versus Jason. Jason Takes Manhattan.
That's a bad movie.
The New Chapter.
Like, everybody was so excited for Freddy.
Bad isn't good, no, or good. Bad isn't bad.
Everyone was so excited for Freddy versus Jason.
I think it's a good bad.
Yeah.
I think it's a good bad movie. It's a guilty pleasure film, like that kind of good bad.
But it's not great.
It's not the Jason or Freddy film that I'm going to pick first,
right?
For sure. It's very much middle of the pack, and that's not saying a whole lot, because really, I think your Friday the 13th, franchise has 4 good films, and then they start to trip off to, like, you know, okay, well, this one's, you know, I'm going to watch this one because I just want to see people die, and they've got some cool deaths and some
deaths and
cool
titties.
You know, or they did go with a comedy kind of sex scene in the new generation, the Friday the 13th New Generation with the kids in it that had the psychic powers. That was a different route. And then Jason X.
You're not convincing me to watch this franchise at all.
Watch.
So what's considered the top three?
I haven't seen all of them either, but I've seen a few of them.
Not in any specific order, but part 1, 2, and 3. If I had to rank those three, I'd say 3, 2, and 1 are probably your best one. 3 is whenever he's in his typical mask that you see him in now. And his machete. 2 is the one where he wears the potato sack over his head and has the pitchfork.
Well, that I remember part 2 took some flack because it's not that bloody, because the studio asked for it to be a little less bloody. So people were kind of like, they go to the movies to see blood and they didn't get that, you know?
Yeah. But it's entertaining throughout the whole series. But yeah, Jason Takes Manhattan. You don't really want to watch that. Jason X, you probably don't want to watch that. the remake
Takes Manhattan.
The remake has that jerk from the first Transformers movie.
Isn't there a Jason in space?
I saw that.
Yeah, that's Jason X. That's Jason.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's
horrible.
That's where he's frozen, and they finally found him, and they're going to take him to this high tech prison. But then he accidentally unthaws, and they have an android there. Kind of like in Aliens, and she knocks him down the shaft, and this alien tech connects to him, and he becomes like friggin' cyborg Jason.
I will give Jason X credit for special effects. You know, it had a high budget, but yeah, it's a bad movie. I actually did see that one.
Yes. The most expensive bad movie you'll ever watch.
It's interesting, the Friday the 13th franchise and how much it spawned, though, and you know, and it's a cultural phenomenon. You know, people, you could ask your grandmothers, they probably would tell you, they might not know his name as Jason Voorhees, but they would probably tell you the movie. I mean, that's just how popular the franchise has become. Mm-hmm. And it's got its fan base. Kids every year want to dress up as Jason for Halloween. There's action figures and video games and you name it. So, I mean, it did something right. It found an audience. And 40 years later, here we are talking about the original film. And, you know, I mean, it's not a terrible franchise. It just is something you just enjoy for what it is.
No, yeah, I think, you know, what it turned into and what it evolved to is just amazing if you think about it. Like, it started here, and then it was eventually got reimagined as, you know, you had the cyborg Jason. You have this version where Jason punches a guy's head off in whenever he's in Jason Takes Manhattan. He appeared on an Arsenio Hall talk show. And we've got all kinds of Jason stuff still. He's still popular, and we still say Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's definitely made his mark. That franchise has made its mark, and it's a staple and stance in horror history.
Yep. For sure. And if I had to, if I'm honestly ranking this movie, I probably wouldn't give it more than a C+. But I think the popularity of it and what it spawned, it deserves at least a B. You know, I think that's fair, because I think if you were to watch this without the sequels and all that, not knowing what it was, you'd give it a C. But because of what it spawned and what it caused, I think it deserves, as a retrograde, to be brought up to a B at least, because it became culturally important. That's great.
B or B minus is probably fair.
That's crazy to think that a movie that just isn't that good, critics didn't like it, has became a culturally important film as far as horror movies go. And that just shows you, if you're a filmmaker out there, just make your movie. You never know.
I give it a D for D's nuts, and I did not watch the movie.
Thank you, Mark.
No.
So let's get into our top five now.
I'm very classy, guys.
Our weekly top five this week is the top horror franchises of all time. And this might be one of those lists where our lists are very similar, but that's okay, because there's only so many to choose from.
I'll start off first, since I didn't watch the movie in the last segment. So,
sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah, go for it.
No, motherfucker.
All right, so the top five horror. I'm going to go with number five, and it actually, very first movie of this franchise started out as a horror movie. More like a atomic horror movie, but it's Godzilla franchise.
That's nice. A stretch, but okay.
Hey, but the last Japanese Godzilla movie was portrayed as kind of a horror movie.
Godzilla's like watching a horror movie because it's so bad.
Yeah. That's my number five. It's a stretch, I know.
Nice.
But, yeah. It horrified audiences back then when they first saw it. Japanese audiences, because they were so... they were the only people who knew what a nuclear attack felt like.
Yeah. You know?
So, yeah. That's my number five. Go ahead, Matt.
Number five, I have the Halloween franchise. I feel like, you know, this... You don't have a whole lot of great films in here.
I don't have that on my list.
What? But this film, number one and two, pretty solid horror films. And then, you know, it evolved into H2O and then Resurrection, you know, of course, after, you know, Halloween 3, 4, and 5. And then you had the retroactive film that came out in 2018.
With Rob Zombie?
No.
Well, you had those two.
Directed.
Yeah,
directed by Rob Zombie.
And then you had the retro one from or retroactive film in 2018.
The Legacy
kind
sequel.
Of
a retro legacy
sequel that wiped out all of them.
I heard it was really good, successfully.
It was.
You watched it?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I have a number five.
Mark?
I have the only modern franchise I have on here, and that is the Saw franchise. They're not all great, but you got to give Saw a lot of credit to kind of bringing back horror into the mainstream. I think without Saw, you don't get The Conjuring and some of these movies we're getting now. Saw proved that there's a market still for horror movies, because horror movies, man, in the late 90s, early 2000s, they were going direct to DVD. You know, you did have Eli Roth with his Hostel films, which I don't like at all. I think the Hostel films are definitely torture porn. Horror franchises are really starting to die. And I think Saw gets a lot of credit for bringing horror back into the mainstream. And it's hard to, it's even if you don't like him, it's hard to ignore the success of the Saw franchise for modern art. Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah. My number four is kind of in the same time frame. The Final Destination movies.
Oh, nice.
They get so creative with a lot of the death in that movie.
I don't think I've ever seen any of them.
I think it's kind of an underrated. Yeah.
You haven't seen any of them?
Yeah. Just dumb luck, the horror movie.
Anytime I see one of those big rig flatbeds carrying logs or pipes.
Yeah, I've seen the images in the trailers. Yeah.
I have to hang back.
Yeah, I never.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Final Destination, kind of an underrated franchise. And I think it has legs to grow on. Final Destination, but in a way I can kind of tie another franchise with it, and it's The Purge. There's always The Purge, the horror of having no form of government for one day. It's pretty scary. You know, Matt's total dream there. Because that's all he cares about.
For 24 hours.
Yeah. But The Purge and Final Destination are tied for my number four. Nice. Go ahead, Matt. What's your number four?
I will start by saying I do believe Saw expanded what horror was able to do and continue in the 2000s. I think before that it was Scream, which is going to be my honorable mention. I forgot to mention earlier, but Scream and 95, I felt like it kind of helped keep horror alive in the 90s. It was a solid film that, Wes Craven made and, spawned something that I didn't think it was going to continue. But my pick for number four is Saw. Same reasons that Mark had. I think number one and two, really good. Number three is when it starts to be real torture porn, way more gore.
Then it starts getting silly. Yeah.
Yeah, then it starts getting
silly. I've seen the first five.
They were successful.
Yeah,
I think I've seen the first five, and that's it. And then I couldn't continue watching it because even that's like too much for me.
My number four is the Halloween franchise, which, it's made it again like Friday the 13th. And it spawned a franchise which made Halloween a little scarier, a little more of a cultural event phenomenon. People love their Michael Myers in that character. And, it's still making movies today, Halloween movies.
Yep.
Yep. My number three is Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. It is, I think, the first scary franchise for me as a kid. Nice. But the first Nightmare movie I ever watched was Part 2. So I started out with a mediocre one,
Definitely not the worst one ever.
No.
But
no, it was mediocre.
A weaker one. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've always thought it had a pretty strong opening, with the Nightmare of the Bus scene. But Part 3 was very entertaining. I like that one the most. Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy Krueger, very iconic horror character.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you have to sleep.
Yeah.
But if you sleep, you might run into Freddy. Who would be scared of that,
For real.
A natural function like that, you can't deny it. Wes Craven, he's definitely one of the masters of horror. Modern horror, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. That's my number three. Go ahead, Matt.
My number three is this franchise that we talked about today, Friday the 13th. It was one of the first horror films that I ever saw. And, if you're just looking for a straightforward, sexual comedy or slashing and this is your franchise. It's got, some really good solid films and it's got some films that you watch just cause you want to see a bad movie. But very successful and maybe we'll see some more.
So you're saying the Friday the 13th, according to your ranking is better than Halloween as far as quality.
Yeah. They have more good Friday the 13th films than Halloween films or Saw films. And that's not saying a whole lot. But you can probably pick four or five very watchable and rewatchable Friday the 13th movies versus, like, if you had to pick five Halloween movies to watch that were really good and really rewatchable. For me, that's just my opinion.
Okay.
My number three is the Evil Dead franchise, the original, not that remake from a few years ago, the original, which spawned the idea of horror comedies in a way and horror science fiction in some ways. Ash is such a memorable character. I mean, Bruce Campbell's made a fucking career out of it, you know? They're all three movies are a lot of fun to watch. Even if part two is a bit of a remake of part one. And of course, Army of Darkness is fantastic. A lot of fun. And I'm holding out hope that Sam Raimi and him decide to make one more. I'd love to see one more,
But didn't you see the two seasons of the Evil Dead series?
I saw some of the first
with Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
I heard it was good. And the second season was even better.
I think it's one of those things, I was watching it and they took it off of Netflix and I just never was able to finish it. So, but maybe we'll go back on it.
Yeah.
It might be on Amazon Prime or something. I never looked. But that's my number three.
My number two, it's actually my kind of favorite subgenre of horror. And it's The Conjuring. I really love those supernatural-esque type horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a way, it's somewhat relatable.
Well, and they're based on true stories.
Yeah, they're based on true stories.
Yeah.
And do you guys remember a time, every time last year we had a guest, we always kind of made them tell a ghost story?
Oh, yeah.
A personal ghost story.
That was a running
thing. Which is kind of fun. It's a random thing that I decided for a guest of the show to come on and do. But for a bit there, we've been having them, our guests, share their personal ghost stories. But anyways, number two, The Conjuring. And it's part of a whole franchise with Sinister and other... what was the other part of that universe? Movies part of that universe?
In Insidious, maybe?
Insidious, yeah. That's part of that universe, too.
Yeah.
So,
The Nun. The Nun
is part
of that. Those are very... The only thing is that I feel like they rely on jump scares a lot.
Yeah.
I do love the lore. The lore and the story behind it is awesome. Yeah. I tend to look down on films that rely on jump scare a whole lot. Yeah. But they are good. They are entertaining.
Yeah. I don't recall The Conjuring being that bad as far as jump scares.
It's The Nun. Yeah. The Nun movies are highly dependent on jump scares.
Yeah, cheap scares.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about you, Mark? What's your number two?
My number two is... we skipped Matt. Yeah, Matt's number two.
Oh, I'm sorry, Matt. What's your number two? Sorry.
My number two is...
it's getting late.
Nightmare on Elm Street. That whole series. Tons of good movies in there. Most notably, 1 and 3. Probably you can interchange those as the best. 4's not bad. You've got a couple really bad ones in there, like The Dream Child. That number 5 is bad. New Nightmare is real solid, and 2's not too bad. And then you had Freddy versus Jason, which is just hilarious. But Nightmare on Elm Street.
My number 2 is without this series, we don't have The Walking Dead. We don't have zombie horror as we know it. That is George Romero's Living Dead franchise, which was a franchise. It had sequels, you know. But the Night of the Living Dead, the movies that it spawned, I mean, possibly in some ways more culturally important than the franchise I have at number one. I think all the credit in the world goes to George Romero and what he did with the Living Dead and that franchise, because we don't get the things we have. We just don't. We probably don't have the Walking Dead things that are very popular today.
Good point. Yeah.
My number one is Child's Play.
Nice.
There's something about the killer doll, man. I thought the first one was pretty exciting. I remember watching that as a kid, and I thought the special effects of the first one were really good. especially when Chucky's freestanding and he's doing all this reacting and stuff, being shot at. I think he was shot at. Yeah, was he shot at?
He was.
Yeah. And there was that scene, it kind of looked kind of cheesy in a way, seeing him flip over and he's crying in pain. But dude, you're a doll. How can you feel pain? You know? Well,
he's getting more real. Remember, starts turning more human. And that's why he needs to get into the boy so that he can get a new body. But man, yeah. Whenever the mom is holding him and she's threatening to throw him into the fire and he's like, you fucking bitch. And then his voice is not the best friend voice that you hear from his pull string.
Yeah.
But that, man, it's just, that's creepy. That was a good number one. For yeah. sure.
Very good number one. What about you, Bart?
Skipping Matt again.
I'm sorry, Matt. I skipped Matt again. I'm sorry, Matt.
What did I do to you?
I got scared thinking about these movies. And then
I'm going to show my true favorite kind of horror movie, and I love slapstick. I love Sam Raimi and his combination of horror and comedy, and that's Evil Dead. I think the first one just was the way you followed the spirit was like looked like it was going through the trees, and then the Necronomicon, the Book of the Dead, bound in human flesh and inked in demon blood,
ancient rape.
Burial ritual. Yeah, the tree rape, and then just the what it turned into, the slapstick, you know, slapstick horror with Bruce Campbell, groovy.
And there's that one scene in Evil Dead 2 that still makes me laugh when he was going nuts in the cabin. Everything is being moved, and yes. That light bulb is bobbing up and down, and Bruce Campbell's like mocking it. Oh, I'm bobbing up and down too. It's so funny.
Man, he was just the cool thing about, I know the new Evil Dead movie wasn't as good as the previous ones that, you know, preceded it, but I went and saw it at the Vintage, and man, I loved how they talked about how that film came to be. And Sam Raimi, just him and Bruce Campbell touring the countryside, trying to film stuff and sleeping in gyms and, going through what they went through to make that movie, and America kind of turning down the movie because they thought, you know, it just had no place in American film. And then they went and showed it at a Swiss film festival and it did great. And that's how they were able to get it to go here. And just what Sam Raimi was able to do after that, you know, with Spider-Man. And then now he's going to direct the second Doctor Strange movie. I just, you know, just love that franchise and everything that came of it.
My number one, I admittedly pulled along here and I had a tie. I just couldn't decide between these two, and that's Friday the 13th and the Nightmare on Elm Street films. I just think that they're both so culturally significant to what they spawned. When they first announced Freddy vs. Jason, I was in high school. That movie literally took like 4 years to get made. It ended up not coming out to like, what year did it come out, 99 or 2000? There was a teaser trailer for Freddy vs. Jason almost 2 years before the film came out. And it finally came out, and it wasn't what people wanted. But those two characters are so iconic now, so popular in the franchise they spawn. I just couldn't pick one. I lean more towards Freddy. I like the Nightmare on Elm Street films a little bit more. But I couldn't leave Friday the 13th alone, you know. I just think that they're right there neck and neck for number one. It's the most important top horror franchises we've ever had.
Yeah. Elm Street saved New Line Cinema. Yep. I mean, it was the house that Freddy built.
Mm-hmm. So, you know.
So, good
pick. Or saved. Yep.
Then they still went under for a few years after the success of the Lord of the Rings. And now, what a couple years ago, they brought New Line Cinema back. So, yeah. But, all right. Well, let's do some news then. And we're going to kick that off with some Doctor Strange news, since you mentioned Doctor Strange. And he's going to be in Spider-Man 3, the untitled third MCU movie. Man, this actually has gotten some kickback from people. People were like, man, can we get an MCU Spider-Man movie without him having a mentor? You know, because he had Iron Man in part one, Nick Fury in part two, and now we're going to get Doctor Strange. But
does that mean we'll see Madam Web?
I'm wondering.
You could. She's kind of a, you know,
she's kind of a extra dimensional type.
Well, that character, you know, we know the new Doctor Strange movie is called, was it the Multiverse of Madness or whatever it's called? So, you know, maybe we're going to get some Spider-Verse type stuff in this. There's rumor, you know, we have Jamie Foxx coming back to play Electro. There's a lot of rumors going around about Andrew Garfield appearing in the film. So who knows what we're going to get with this. But I like Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange enough that I'm fine with him being in the film. I get why the haters are like, oh, why does Spider-Man need a mentor? But, you know, hey, I think it's kind of cool. It's like those old comic books you read where your favorite characters teamed up. So I think it's kind of cool to see him in the movies together. You know,
or Tobey Maguire making.
I hope they get Tobey Maguire. You know, just signed on.
Have you seen him lately? He's
He could be the
starting to be middle aged like me and Long there. He doesn't look so good anymore. You know?
They could just de-age him.
We'll see. I don't know. Maybe. Don't want too many Spider-Mans, but it's cool. Let's move into DC then. HBO Max officially, this had been a rumor back last year, but they officially went ahead and gave the green light for a 10-episode Green Lantern Corps series. As a Green Lantern fan, I'm super excited about this. One of my favorite comic characters. You know, I'm one of the people that have defended the Ryan Reynolds movie sometimes because it's not great, but I still enjoy it for what it is because it's the only Green Lantern movie I have until I get something better. And hopefully this is better, you know. I think it's kind of cool. And not being on regular television, they're not bounded by boundaries, so they can maybe make it a little bit more serious and do some good Green Lantern stuff. Any thoughts? Yeah,
that's one of the coolest catchphrases he has, even though it's really long, in Blackest Day and Darkest Night. Oh. Pamela Anderson can't escape my sights or something like that.
He is a fantastic Green Lantern. Is a fantastic character, so it deserves to have more than what we've gotten so far. Long, are you excited that Netflix is going to do another Godzilla anime or animated show?
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. I know that. Well, for me personally, as a hardcore Godzilla fan, I was not pleased with the anime. Because even though it was in a very fantastical sci-fi setting, it
wasn't exciting.
it wasn't exciting at all. I mean, animation itself will not. I mean, it can be limited by budget, but I mean, it's just free your imagination and take it to its fullest potential. And I'm glad. I'm pretty familiar with the studios that are behind. That are co-producing this, and it's not freaking Toho Animation, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. Studio Bones and Studio Orange, they're both animating this, and it looks like 2D style animation.
Did it have a name? It had a name, didn't it? But, official name?
Yeah, Singularity or something. Yeah, Singularity. Godzilla Singularity. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully it's not going to be a long wait in 2021. Sometime. Hopefully it's not fall 2021. Well, that would suck.
Netflix tends to have a history of announcing things after they're already in production. You know, I've noticed that.
Oh, like, okay.
Netflix usually doesn't announce stuff unless they know it's coming soon. So I would imagine hopefully sometime in 2021 it's coming. You know, there's been some things like
summer at the latest.
I mean, there's been some things like the Netflix, the Kevin Smith He-Man. It got pushed back a little bit, but that was a product of COVID-19, and they had to, you know, California had a lot of shutdowns, so they had to take a break on production of He-Man, so it got pushed back a little bit. But hopefully this is already well into production, and we get it next year sometime. I was trying to look and make sure we got the name right. Godzilla Singular Point. Yeah.
So Singular Point? Okay.
Otherwise, more movies being moved around. Dune got pushed back to next October. They pushed Batman back into early 22. They pushed Jurassic Park back almost a year to 22 also. It just continues on. And part of that, Patty Jenkins has been talking this week about, she's saying Wonder Woman will not go to video on demand. They're going to wait it out. But she also talks that she fears that if this isn't solved soon, that movie theaters might go away. What do y'all think about that?
Yeah. It would suck for movie theaters to go away because, you know, I think it's a pastime that's taken for granted by at least American audiences. You know, I mean, baseball is, you know, America's pastime, but I think year round movies are a very, I take it for granted entertainment venue, in my opinion. No, I don't want to see it go.
And you're exactly right. It's a pastime that you don't, you take it for granted because you go to a lot of movies, but you also can remember who you saw big movies with. Like, I know I saw The Dark Knight with Matt, you know, and I remember going to see it. And we saw Spider-Man 3 also, I remember, with like a whole bunch of us. Remember, Matt, we had like 12 of us went. Yeah. And you remember those big movies. You know who you saw them with. You know, we don't get the experience of standing in line as much anymore because of the internet. You can pre-order tickets and pre-order your seats. So that part is missed, but there's still something about the theater experience. And I certainly hope it doesn't go away, you know, for sure. Cause movies are meant to be seen in a certain way. I truly believe that. And, hopefully they survive. We get through this, but, we'll see.
Yeah. In relation to, animation news, Kate Mulgrew, who's famous for playing Captain Janeway from Star Trek Voyager, is reprising a role as Captain Janeway in Nickelodeon's animated Star Trek series.
Not really.
Star Trek Prodigy.
I saw the headline, but I didn't read it the other day.
So she's going to be revisiting that character again, in animation form at least. So,
good deal.
Yeah. That's my only
contribution. Something I missed. It's all the news I had anyway. cool beans. Well, let's preview next week's Halloween Horrors film. We're going to get away from the death of slashers and alien monsters like in The Thing and Jason Voorhees' mother this week. Well, there's still some death in this movie, but it's done in a more of a comedic way, you could say. And we're going to talk the Tim Burton film Mars Attacks.
What is that?
White House is coming out live.
My fellow Americans, this is a momentous occasion. It is profoundly moving to know there is intelligent life out there, alien life, and our world will never feel quite the same again. Once you believe.
Martians, please come to Earth, please.
Once you rise above fear.
Annihilate! Kill! Kill!
Let's not be too rash.
Then you'll be invited.
Hi there. Are you interested in the White House?
To meet with a new people.
It's so perfect that it's happening at the beginning of the new millennium.
More powerful than the might of America.
I'll tell you one thing, they ain't getting a TV.
More advanced than the brains of Britain.
Ladies and gentlemen, this could be a cultural misunderstanding.
But be prepared for a few changes to what we know and love.
You're Tom Jones, right? It ain't unusual.
As we must learn to dance.
Girls, get out!
To a new tune. You. Jack Nicholson.
Whoa. Why can't we all just get along?
Glenn Close.
Kick the crap out of them.
Pierce Brosnan.
What, in your view, are some of the things that the Martians can teach us, Professor?
Quite a lot about Mars, I expect, Natalie.
That means
Danny DeVito.
You want to conquer the world, you're going to need lawyers, right?
And Annette Bening.
I think they've come to save us.
From director Tim Burton.
Hey, we all make mistakes, Mr. President.
Mars Attacks.
Not anymore. We're going to take charge of this thing.
Yes.
We're going to have some fun next week talking to sci-fi. Kind of, it may not be hard in the traditional sense. But there's some pretty horrifying stuff in this movie too. There's a lot of disintegrations. You know, and
yes.
Jack Nicholson's awesome in this movie.
Pierce Brosnan. Yeah. Sarah Jessica Parker.
It's been a while since I've seen it. So
Jack Black.
So it's on HBO Max for those that are out there and want to watch along with us. So check that out. So next week. It's been a long time since I've seen the film. I actually think I saw this in theaters. I'll have to think on that, but I think I did see Mars Attacks in theaters. And I remember when I first saw it, not initially liking it, but I think it's one of those when I went back and watched it, it grew on me, you know, and based on the famous Topps picture cards. And so, yep, next week, Halloween Horrors continues with Mars Attacks on this show. And other than that, that's all we've got. The Rebel Radio Podcast.com, where you can find all our shows. We're on all apps. Hit the Patreon button for $2. You can join our Patreon. The October Patreon is going to be coming out in the next week or two, as we are going to cover the Resident Evil film, the one with Mia Jovovich. So check that out. And as always, thanks for listening. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the Slasher.
And until next week, remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Go there and do it.
And do it.
But not in a horror movie, or you'll
die. True that.
Right.